Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection, and welcome to the summer edition of Arts Connection, where we look at the intersection of faith, arts, and Canadian culture. And today we're going to listen to segments of interviews taken from some of this year's programs. Our first interview is with Chelsea Amber. But first, let's listen to Beautiful Mess of a Girl from the Introducing Chelsea Amber CD by Chelsea Amber.
So what if I'm not perfect? So what? It's not the end of the world. I may not have found my match, but I think that I'm a catch. I'm a beautiful mess of a girl. So what if you don't think I'm worth it? So what? It's not the end of the world. Got a band-aid on my heart, and I'll never look the part. I'm a beautiful mess of a girl.
Chelsea Amber. Good. Well, let's start with by giving our listeners a little bit of background about you. I know you've been into Ontario, into the Kitchener-Waterloo area a couple of times, but let's remind them who you are and what you where you got your start. How did your interest in music get started?
You know what? It was so early that I don't actually remember when it started. My mom told me that when we were in church one time when I was little, and I don't remember this, but the preacher was preaching, and I decided that I wanted to sing for everyone, so I got out of the pew and started running up to the front, and then my mom had to go get me. So that was before I can even remember. But I do remember my big debut in my room with my Amy Grant cassette tapes and my stuffed animals as an audience.
Well, when did you actually get moving from the cassette tapes and your animals as your stuffed animals as an audience? When did you actually move into performing and getting to that point where you were singing in front of people?
Well, in elementary school and junior high, it started at school and church in kids' choirs and talent shows. And then in high school, I started singing more. I started leading worship at my church, and that's when I learned how to play with a band and put on a concert.
Well, looking at that, what sort of led you to where you are now as a professional musician and making this your career?
Well, I was singing at a coffee house at a local church one time, and there was a person there from Music Nova Scotia, which is the industry association here, and they encouraged me to apply for some grant money to record an album, and so I did, and the application was successful, and so I was able to get some money together and put out my first album back in 2007.
Well, when you're doing all of this, what kind of led you to sort of making that decision that this is what I want to do with my life? This is where I want to be as an artist.
Mm-hmm. I think I always knew. I think it's one of those things where you just know when you feel most alive. And for me, I feel most alive when I'm singing. So it just was always something I knew that I wanted to do with my life. And yeah, I think sometimes when God puts things inside of you, you almost like can't help but do them because it's just the way he made you. So I feel like that's the way it was with music. Like he placed that inside of me and I just can't help but do it.
Well, when you're doing this, and you said you started by singing with your Amy Grant tapes and that, who have been your influences? Who has influenced you musically as you've matured as an artist?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say along the way, Brooke Fraser was a big influence. She wrote a few songs for Hillsong, a few worship songs, and then she also has her own pop music, and she uses a lot of, along the way, she's used a lot of her resources as a musician to build into social issues like poverty and things like that. So I find that really inspiring to see someone who writes for the church and then also reaches outside of the church and who has a consciousness for global issues.
Looking at the fact too as well, you do your own songwriting and that. Who, other than Brooke, have there been other people who have influenced you as a songwriter?
Hmm. I really like the guys from City Harmonic. I really love their songwriting. In the pop world, there's a guy named Ryan Tedder who fronts a band called One Republic. He's a really good songwriter. So. Yeah, I definitely look up to his songwriting. And in terms of people that I've worked with, I've learned a lot from working with Nia Fields and Paul Coleman and another lady named Cindy Morgan. And they're all songwriters who have worked with me, and I've gotten a chance to glean from some of their knowledge.
I met Cindy Morgan a number of years back when her husband, whose name just escapes me right now, he's a writer from Alberta, we're at a writer's conference that I was at. Looking at that and looking at your style, how do you sort of describe yourself as a musician when you're talking to people and you're trying to explain who you are and what you do?
Mm-hmm. I would say that musically, the style is a mix of pop and soul. And also my relationship with God is very important to me and affects every area of my life. So when I write, every songwriter writes from their own perspective, and my perspective is one that is rooted in my faith.
Now, does that mean that every song you write, and I've heard your album that, and I'm sort of asking this question already, knowing the answer, but does it mean that every song you write always has a spiritual message to it, whether or not you use the word Jesus, God, or whatever in there?
Yeah, well, I would say that it doesn't always have the name of Jesus. I describe it similar to the Book of Esther, where God is never actually mentioned in the Book of Esther, but at the same time, God is all over it, and you can see him moving in that situation. And when I look at the Bible, there are just the Bible talks about every facet of our life. And so when I'm talking about a relationship, well, God is the God of relationships. And so I'm coming at it from a Christian perspective of what it means to be in a relationship. Or in terms of value, I talk about self-esteem in my songs. And that comes from in the Bible, it talks about how valuable we are in Psalm 139. He knit us together in our mother's womb. So whether or not I actually mention Jesus, I'm still very much rooted in my faith, in my songs.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return to this special summer edition of Arts Connection, we're going to listen to an interview with artist Robert McAfee. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Skies. The heliotrope gold is on the rise. It's hard to see where it's coming from, for no eye has seen the better things to come. The healing river and this trickle of song can only be contained for so long. Yeah, an ocean kiss of tenderness is holding us together with a bond so strong. We're heading back to the willows where our hearts are.
after spilling up a ton. High and low, rich and poor, far and wide, yeah, old and young. We'll be in it together in the bonds of strong. It can only be contained for so long. Your terror mama and Abba daddy don't sit down. They got the love lamp burning, yeah, we're keeping it on.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Bond So Strong from Peter Tichelaar's Better Things CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to listen to an interview with artist Robert McAfee. Reading through some of the research material, it looks like you took a little bit of a lengthy journey to arrive at the destination of being a full-time landscape artist. Can you sort of give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what that journey was?
Well, my journey started pretty much like most artists. I was born with a paintbrush in my hand, pretty much, and pretty much always dreamed as a child of being a full-time artist. The dream for me came from a relationship, a very close relationship with my uncle, the late Jack Reed, and he was a full-time artist the entire time that I knew him, and I grew up aspiring to be just like him, That road took me through quite a few twists and turns and ups and downs through school and post-school careers to the point where I was working with TD Bank Financial Group, and I really was quite beside myself in a little cubicle on the 30th floor of one of the bank towers downtown, and just really feeling that I needed to do something about realizing the dream of becoming an artist, because I just couldn't go on in the banking, the sort of academic world. I had a pull in a different direction.
Well, when you finally made that decision to go full time as an artist, what kind of things were you facing? Like, how easy was it to make that kind of a decision to leave sort of like the security of a 9-to-5 job into work as an artist, where most of the people I talk in the arts, it's a very difficult and challenging way of earning a living?
It certainly is, and I can reflect on the art business going back 30 and 40 years because of my relationship with Jack Reed. He certainly did things the old-fashioned way, using galleries and home shows and representatives across the country. But today we are into a different kind of an era, and this is greatly to the advantage of artists and musicians. We have the internet, and we have websites now, and we have the ability to do our own marketing on a pretty grand scale with very, very limited budget requirements. So there came a time when I was working at the bank that one of my colleagues said to me, Robert, why don't you take a couple of your paintings and take some good pictures of it, put it up on Kijiji or Craigslist or something like that, and see how it goes. And my only experience to that point with internet selling was eBay, and art on eBay typically is $25, $50, $75 for very elaborate paintings, and I had really had no desire whatsoever to be a part of that. But in a desire to realize a career as an artist, I thought, what the heck, I'll give it a try and see what God has for me here. And so that night, I took a couple of snapshots with my BlackBerry cell phone, not very clear pictures, of a couple of oil paintings that I had recently done. And I posted one of them on Kijiji. And the very next day, the painting was sold to a woman who lived 4 hours from where I live. And she was coming the very next day to pick it up and take it home. And I realized that something was really radically changing in my life. This was unlike any gallery experience I'd ever had before. This continued for a couple of years, and then there came a day at the bank when I just said to myself, something has got to give. I've either got to be moved by the Lord, or I have got to move myself, but one way or another, I've got to become a I got to realize the dream. You know, I've got to find out if it's possible to do this thing that I really want to do.
Well, looking at that and looking back on the whole that whole decision, ever any regrets?
My only regret is that I didn't try it sooner. I have to say that I grew up like most people, hearing other successful people in business saying things like, "You need to step out and try it. You need to take a leap of faith." For me, the leap of faith didn't come voluntarily. I have to say that there came a point in the bank when our whole division was being downsized, and 65 of us were pulled together in a big room, and the HR people showed up, and the executives were in the room, and they had those white envelopes in their hands. And, you know, the first sentence that comes out of the boss's mouth is, "We really appreciate all of you and love the work that you do." You have to know that your days with that organization are probably coming to an end. And all around me that day, there were people that were in tears, that were close to retirement but not quite ready for retirement, and they were really distraught at what their futures held. And for about 20 seconds, I remember standing there thinking the same thing. I have 3 children at home, I have mortgage and cars in the driveway. And yet, just about 25 seconds in, I realized that this was the day that God was choosing to say, "Robert, here's your doorway into your dream." And to answer your question, do I have any regrets? Absolutely not. Every single day has been an absolute blessing, and every morning that I wake up, that I get to sit and paint or go out in the woods as I'm going today to do some sketches, I am absolutely in awe of God's movement in my life and the way he's brought things about. And I'm just challenged to get up every day and make the most of every single opportunity that comes my way.
After this final break, the summer edition of Arts Connection will return with an interview with author Murray Pura. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Search me, God. See beyond the surface. Know my heart. See the hidden places. Test my thoughts. Remove any wrong way in me. Search me, God.
Arts Connection, you've been listening to Search Me from the We Won't Stop CD by Alan Froese. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up this summer edition of Arts Connection with an interview with artist Murray Pura. Now, I was looking at doing some background research on you and that, and your website said you started writing stories when you were 8 and 9.
I know.
Yeah. How did that sort of lead to the point where you're now doing this full time?
Well, that was writing stories for my mother. I remember it was she happened to like a television show at the time about a TV lawyer. So I decided I had an audience, so I made up stories. Of course, they weren't very sophisticated or complex, but in any case, I wrote them on 3x5 index cards, stapled them together, made a cover and everything on that. Of course, mother said, "Well, this is great, this is fine," and away we went. And I would just write these stories, but then that led to more complicated stories through my teen years, and writing, I know, about Canadian history, historical novels, about all kinds of different things. And that just kept going. I became a Christian in 1967, and that affected, of course, my writing, and it changed everything, just in terms of some of the dynamic involved. My first story ever published, in terms of really published and being paid for, was when I was about 14, 15 in there, and there used to be a pamphlet handed out to churches in Canada, the United States, called Teen Power, and they took submissions, and I submitted a story, and they accepted it, and I think they paid me about $50. I still have the check stub for that, and so that just, you know, that was kind of the, hey, I can really do this. I actually have an audience bigger than my mother or a few good friends who will say nice things. So that's how that all started, and from there it just mushed. I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot to say about the stepping stones and this happened here and that happened there, but that's kind of really where it kept taking off.
Well, when did you sort of make that decision that you were going, this was going to be your career? Like, I'm going to be a writer,
it all the time. I mean, I have two master's degrees, one from Acadia, one from Regent in Vancouver, but I, you know, and a BA, of course, from Providence, but I was always writing, even when I was doing that. So even though I could see that I was going to be doing pastoring and speaking, I was always writing on the side. I was always, you know, making my stories, and I remember submitting some to professors that were favorites of mine. You know, J.F. Packer knew I was writing, Lauren Wilkinson knew I was writing, and I'd give them some stories, and they started getting published in Crux magazine, which came out of Regent, and that led to a lot of other things. But I think along that way, I said, no, this is something I'm always going to be doing. And I used to take as my role model other Christians who had both been, you know, pastors and writers, you know, Gerard Manley Hopkins, in a way, a poet like that, but also John Donne, George Herbert, even C.S. Lewis, in a way, though he wasn't really a pastor, yet he was a Christian who was writing and doing something else at the same time. He was a lecturer. So that kind of was always there. And then there was a big breakthrough in about 5-6 years ago now. I mean, I'd already published in the United States. I'd worked with Harper One San Francisco. I'd worked with Richard Foster on his Life with God Bible. It used to be called the Renovare Bible. But I wrote a book that was the first time a piece of fiction was published in the American market. And that was with Barber. And that opened up all kinds of doors. All of a sudden, my agent, who lives in North Carolina, had all kinds of offers to write for different publishers, and I think that's when I said, okay, I'm going to, for now, I prayed about it, thought about it, and so I'm going to step away from pastoral ministry for now and just focus on the writing. And that, because of that breakthrough in that market, which gave me a much bigger audience and the means to have the kind of royalties that you could, you know, you could actually have a bit of a living on.
Well, one of the things I've been finding is as I was looking through the list of your publication, the books have been published, and you mentioned yourself. You've done historical novels. You worked on the Renovare, the Bible, and things like that. You've written in a lot of different genres. Is there one particular genre that you prefer to another?
If somebody put me in a desert island and said, "Well, you're only going to get to write three books," you know, and you can choose your genre, and even though I find it helpful to change genres just to refresh your mind. I like literary fiction and historical fiction the best, yeah. So in other words, basically the novel that won the historical novel of the year for the Word Guild in 2012 in Toronto, that's part of a series, and the first book in that series was a finalist for the Cubsar Literary Award, Zoe, and then The White Birds of Morning. That kind of genre, when I'm doing historical fiction, combined with literary fiction. And, you know, somebody says, well, what's literary fiction? Well, literary fiction is kind of, you know what I mean? It's just, you take it higher in terms of complexity, and you take it deeper in terms of depth. than the other genres. You're expecting your reader to go farther with you and not to be upset if you have multiple characters or very deeply ingrained plots. It's more like writing Les Miserables, right, than writing, say, a mystery thriller or a romance.
In doing that and in looking at those, are there any writers out there that you find yourself being heavily influenced by or that you've looked to as an influence in that particular genre?
Oh, for sure. When I was young, my brother, 5 years older than me, but he's a painter. He's an artist. He taught at the University of Manitoba for his career, but he was always painting and selling paintings and displaying paintings as well as doing neoclassical music. But in any case, he would say, well, you should probably read this guy, and he'd give me Ernest Hemingway. And I can remember reading The Old Man and the Sea when I was young, or The Green Hills of Africa. And that had enormous influence. And then I think a lot of Rudy Weave had a big influence on me, his writing. So did a number of our Canadian writers. Not so much Margaret Lawrence did. And among the Americans, the writers like William Faulkner, F. Scott Fitzgerald, they and the poets have had amazing influence. Simile and metaphor is really important to me in my writing. I want it to be poetry in motion as well as good prose. And so poets have always mattered, like Robert Frost, like Carl Sandburg, like Langston Hughes, and Gerard Manley Hopkins and Herbert and Dunn, and just that colorful use of language. So those have been amazing. And of course the King James Bible, even though I myself, in when I preach, I use modern translations because I'm very concerned about communicating. But just in terms of the richness of the language of the King James, and I was in theater for quite a few years, and that affected it too. All those influences coming together, I think, take you into a place where, for me, it's not only telling the story, but it's telling it well and making the language come alive.
Thank you for listening to the special summer edition of Arts Connection today. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.salaministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at our Faith, Arts, and Canadian Culture Meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Salav Ministries, email Robert at salaministries.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Salaw13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook or check the Arts Connection blog at rdaleleslie.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.